The arrest of Diddy has the potential to be the biggest scandal of all time, connecting conspiracies of politicians, celebrities, with sex trafficking, and even sex tapes. We need to keep a close eye on this situation as it unfolds, and I'm here to cut through all the fog and catch you up on all the moves being made by the elite so you can rest easy that the Illuminati Watcher is on the case. My name is Isaac Weishaupt. I'm the host of Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture, and I've written 9 books on the occult. And there was a book I wrote 10 years ago about hip-hop and the Illuminati with conspiracies that are coming true before our very own eyes. Today I'm going to save you countless hours of online research, of digging through nasty little tabloidy gossip websites, and I'm going to catch you up on all the latest of the Diddy scandal and conspiracies around it. We're going to go through the actual indictment first, so you can understand what the charges are, all right? Which will tie us into the world of Epstein with blackmail sex tapes, and I'll explain how this works through Charles Manson. That's right, there was allegations of Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate having celebrity sex tapes as well. We're going to look at Diddy's bodyguard statements about these sex tapes with celebrities and politicians allegedly being involved, and Suge Knight's going to enter the chat. He's going to spill the beans on Clive Davis. That's right. Allegedly grooming Diddy, which Diddy apparently learned the techniques from, allegedly, right? And that connects us into the world of Usher and Justin Bieber. Then we're going to go around the room with some pop culture celebrity conspiracies. We're going to talk about Russell Brand, Ron Burkle, Ashton Kutcher, Bill Clinton, Epstein, Google Sergey Brin, 23andMe, that's right, the DNA company, Nicki Minaj tweets, Usher's deleted tweets. And then to round it off, some Super Bowl halftime show conspiracies. That's right. Kendrick Lamar, Lil Wayne, and the Suicide Boys. It's all in today's show. Now, real quick housekeeping. If you want more on Diddy, I've got options for you. There's 4 options right now. I mean, there's more, but these are the ones I will steer you towards. I've got a 3-hour deep dive I did on my Patreon back in June. I'll put a link in the show notes. For less than a cup of coffee in the big time, you can get the 3-hour Diddy Deep Dive and unlock my ad-free show with hundreds of bonus episodes like The Diddy Show. It's a 3-hour deep dive where I consolidated all the info from everything I've ever read or researched. Of course, it was as of June, and things have changed a lot since then. More has been added to that, I should say. Which is what the attempt of today's show is. I'm going to add to it. I also collaborated with Emily over at the House and Habit Substack. You can check out the House and Habit Substack. We did a little podcast, it's crazy, right? We talked about adrenochrome and Diddy. I told Emily, are you sure you want to put this? Because House and Habit is a massive Substack. I said, are you sure you want to do this? And we did it. So we talked about adrenochrome, and that's on her supporters, subscribers, Substack. But you can get like a free preview. And let me tell you what, we talked about Candy Michelle Williams, who is a topic I deep dived into in my 3-hour episode. But Emily took it a step further, and she found all kinds of stuff that I wish I could like share it with you, but she did all the research. So I don't know. You got to check it out. She found stuff from years ago. Of, let's just say, supports the theory of 1,000 bottles of baby lotion and baby oil or whatever. So that's another option. I just released a Breaking Social Norms, the show I do with my wife. It's a very conversational, opinion-based show. It's very different from this show. I did a show about Diddy over there just, you know, this week. And finally, and last but definitely not least, I had my 16th appearance on Tinfoil Hat. That's right. 16. And on it, we talked about Diddy. Now, I assume that's going to be published here soon. I'll put a link in the show notes to their podcast feed if I don't have it available by the time this gets to you. All right? Whew. All right. So, a lot more. If you want more. and, you know, this is my time to shine, folks. 10 years ago, I wrote a book called Sacrifice, Magic Behind the Mic. And if you're new to me, maybe you don't know the story. I published this book talking about Illuminati conspiracies and hip-hop. You know, I talked about Diddy. I talked about the Bronfmans and Seagrams, you know, owning Universal before Bronfmans was a household name due to the Nexium stuff. I mean, this was years before Nexium broke. All right. And what's funny is that around 2016, I went out to SiriusXM Studios to do the All Out show where I got grilled by the audience back in, 16 or 17. I don't remember. And they were like, "You're crazy. All this stuff's crazy conspiracy talk." And I'm telling you, I've never been more vindicated in my life. And of course, everything in the book, you know, not everything is absolutely true. I floated out there and said, these are the conspiracies in the hip-hop world, from blood sacrifices and so on. But as we'll talk about today, I mean, we talked about Aaliyah in the book, and there's now accusations about Aaliyah with Jay-Z and Kim Porter, and oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, the truth might be revealed here, and it's pretty amazing. Not good amazing, but pretty amazing that like we're living through this is what I'm saying. Let's go into the indictment. They released the indictment, or unsealed the indictment. And I'll give you my full review. I'm not a lawyer. This is not legal advice. I have no idea what I'm reading. Okay? It says, count one, racketeering conspiracy. Quote, they're saying that he abused, threatened, and coerced women and others around him to fulfill his sexual desires, protect his reputation, and conceal his conduct. And they go on to say that he needed this full business empire that he controlled to make this criminal enterprise. They list off the companies under his management, you know, Bad Boy, alcohol, marketing. He had a media company, Revolt, apparel with Sean John, and so on. And it says he was forcing members to engage in, quote, sex trafficking, forced labor, kidnapping, arson, bribery, and obstruction of justice. And it goes on to say that the abuse was verbal, emotional, physical, and sexual, including orchestrating performances of sexual activity with male and female commercial sex workers. Quote, Combs ensured participation from the women by, among other things, obtaining and distributing narcotics to them, controlling their careers, leveraging his financial support, and threatening to cut off the same and using intimidation and violence. And something I don't have on this analysis, I was reading about how Wendy Williams was suggesting that Diddy tried to shut her career down too, because they had beef for a while, apparently. They talk about physical abuse, like that hotel video we saw of him dragging Cassie around and beating her. And it says he attempted to bribe staff into silence. They explain what freak-offs are, these parties. I'm going to read you what they say, because I think it's important. I think it's important to cut out all the, you know, content creators and conspiracy people. Let's see what the official, like the big dogs are saying, right? Combs and other members and associates of the Combs enterprise wield the power and prestige of Combs' role at the Combs business to intimidate, threaten, and lure female victims into Combs' orbit, often under the pretense of a romantic relationship. Combs then used force, threats of force, and coercion to cause victims to engage in extended sex acts with male commercial sex workers that Combs referred to as, among other things, freak-offs. Now, side note, I know the Tate brothers are under a lot of heat, and it sounds kind of similar if you ask me. Like, there's one playbook and they all use it. Allegedly, maybe, I don't know. Freak-offs were elaborate and produced sex performances that Combs arranged, directed, masturbated during, and often electronically recorded. That's important. In arranging these freak-offs, Combs, with the assistance of members and associates of the Combs enterprise, transported and caused to be transported commercial sex workers across state lines and internationally. Because when you cross state lines, now you got a federal case, from what I've seen in movies. Twin Peaks, specifically. That's how Dale Cooper ends up in Twin Peaks, because he crossed state lines. Freak-offs occurred regularly, sometimes lasted multiple days, and often involved multiple commercial sex workers. During freak-offs, Combs distributed a variety of controlled substances to victims, in part to keep the victims obedient and compliant. Sometimes unbeknownst to the victims, Combs kept videos he filmed of victims engaging in sex acts with commercial sex workers. After freak-offs, Combs and the victims typically received IV fluids to recover from the physical exertion and drug use. Later on it says, in or about March 2024, during searches of Combs' residence in Miami, Florida, and Los Angeles, California, law enforcement seized various freak-off supplies, including narcotics and more than 1,000 bottles of baby oil and lubricant. 1,000 bottles. And surely you've seen all the memes online of people making fun of this. I mean, that is a hell of a lot of baby oil. I follow, I think his name is Johnsky on TikTok. He said, more than 2 bottles of baby oil in a lifetime is a nefarious amount of baby oil. And I agree with that. That's insane. Now, I'd like to know how it breaks down. Was it like 500 of each? Or was it 800 of one and 200 of the other? I don't know. Did they count 1,000 out? And his lawyer came out and said, oh, well, you know, they buy at Costco and they buy in bulk. Like, come on, dude. What are we saying here? Anyways, it goes on to say that he would coerce people to participate, promising them career opportunities, threatening violence, monitoring medical records, which I think is referring to, if you read, I think it was Cassie's lawsuit. We covered it on the 3-hour deep dive, I think. He was beating Cassie, and she went in for an MRI, and he confiscated the records or something like that. Says he would use the recordings as collateral to ensure silence of victims. Then it goes to count 2 is sex trafficking by force, fraud, or coercion, and count 3 is transportation to engage in prostitution. Oh, the arson thing, I think, is referring to when he tried to blow up Kid Cudi's car, if you remember that. I think he got jealous of him talking to Cassie or something. Anyway, the judge denied any bail. He's in there. And this is the, what do they call it, the Southern District of New York, which has a very high, I think, 97% success rate on their charges. So it seems like a done deal. I've read all kinds of conspiracies and theories about what's going on. Some people say he's doing great behind bars. Other people say he's on suicide watch and he's not eating food. Some people say that's because he thinks he's about to be poisoned through the food. I guess there's a poison where it can create force a heart attack. I don't know. That's like some James Bond stuff. And then I read that he is going to testify in court because he can't wait to tell his side of the story. So, interesting, interesting story. Now let's get into the, juicy bits. Topics all over social media. People are posting photos of Diddy with whoever their enemy is and saying, oh my God, like this person's doing the sex trafficking too. And it's like, well, just because you're friends with Diddy doesn't make that so, right? And I'll extend that to Trump. Trump on The Apprentice said he's very close friends with Diddy and he's a good guy. Does that mean Trump was part of the freak-offs? I don't know. I mean, Trump's kind of a horny dude, so I wouldn't be shocked, but that doesn't make it so, right? There's photos of Diddy on the private jet hanging out with Russell Brand, who we'll talk about later. There's his closeness with Ashton Kutcher, which I actually think that one's suspect as well. We'll talk about him later. There's video of Diddy saying that his favorite party guest was Leo DiCaprio. How dare we? How dare we accuse Leo? But hey, his name got floated out there. So lots of red flags, lots of smoke. But Diddy is, that's why I said at the beginning, this is kind of the most explosive, interesting story because it connects so many worlds, right? Diddy was plugged into all of these things, politics, celebrities, gang activity even. I mean, the dude was plugged in. So of course there's photos of him with everybody. Now, and then on September 24th, there was an article on the Rolling Stone that a woman, another accusation basically, right? A woman has claimed that Sean Diddy Combs and his former bodyguard drugged, bound, and raped her, later learning the alleged rape was recorded and allegedly sold as pornography. Now, this is where things get real nefarious for me. Because, look, if the dude's a freak, he's got these freak-offs, and they're consenting adults, even if they're sex workers. Like, as long as this is voluntary, consensual work or party, I don't care. Doesn't bother me one bit. It's when they start drugging and recording without consent. It's all that stuff. That this is where it's bad. This is where it's nefarious. And it's crazy to me because, and this is more soapboxy, but it's crazy to me because it's like, dude, Diddy and celebrities, you guys could, you know, sleep with whoever you want to, basically. Why do you have to hire sex workers and drug them and assault them? Like, that's crazy. It's crazy. It makes no sense. Until you look at it through the lens of the Epstein blackmail thing. You know, Kanye West said Diddy was a fed, and that story makes the most sense to me. The idea being that Diddy arranges these freak-offs, films them, films politicians and celebrities and famous people in compromising video footage, and now it's blackmail that the feds can use over the person that was filmed to make sure the film doesn't get released. Blackmail, basically. Now, let's see here. In the Rolling Stone story, it talks about, it's terrible. It talks, she relays her story of going through the abuse that she did, right? And the article goes on to recall that Cassie was the one that got the ball rolling on all this, right? Then there were some others that came forward. Joy Dickerson-Neal claimed that Combs drugged and essayed her. Liz Gardner said Combs and Aaron Hall raped her when she was 16. Then another victim came forward saying that Diddy and Bad Boy President Harve Pierre, who I think he's dead now, and a third man gang raped her in 2003 when she was 17. Then you've got the Lil Rod document claiming that Combs essayed him. Model Crystal McKinney alleges that Combs drugged and essayed her in 03. April Lampros said Combs essayed her, and she also said that Combs recorded it and showed it to people. So let's talk about sex tapes. Seems important to these people, right? Who's buying these tapes? Because I find it very hard to believe that Diddy would have to film this stuff and sell it in order to make money. I find that almost impossible to believe. They've got enough money with all the other ventures going on with the booze and the record label and the clothing line. I mean, dude's loaded. He's not trying to make ends meet, is he? Maybe. I don't know. So it brings up more conspiracies to my mind. Of course, you've got the Epstein thing, because Epstein, and we're never going to find out the truth about that either, by the way. I feel like this Diddy thing, we might get the truth about. We might, because there's enough celebrities and like normal folks involved. Because with the Epstein case, it was a lot of billionaires and politicians and old dudes that like nobody knows who they are. So not quite as juicy. But let's visit Ed Sanders. He wrote a book called The Family back in the 71, I think. And it was about the Manson murders, okay? Now, he got in trouble because he roped in a, I don't want to get roped into it either, a satanic group that apparently he had to, I guess, remove from the second edition. I don't know. I've got the first edition. The pages are falling out of it. But in The Family, he wrote about this idea that Roman Polanski allegedly had sex orgy parties at his houses, and he filmed sex tapes of Sharon Tate with him, with other men, all kinds of stuff. And the theory is that the LAPD is in possession of those tapes. All right. Now, how should I do this? Let's start with, he also wrote a book called Sharon Tate, A Life, a book about Sharon Tate. And he says this, he's talking about Sharon Tate's friend and confidant, Shahrokh Hatami, who was a photographer that filmed a documentary about the making of Rosemary's Baby, which, by the way, there's a show called Apartment 9A. I'm very excited to see. It's about, I think it's a prequel to Rosemary's Baby. It should be out here, I think, this week. I'm going to read you from the book now. Roman was what I said that Sharon told me about Roman, about imposed sexual scenes on her. I asked him to explain what he meant. Tommy answered, he was bringing other girls to have threesomes with Sharon, and Sharon didn't like it that he was picking up girls on the sunset and bringing them home to have sex with them. This was prior, Hatami said, to early 1969. It was something I heard talked about amongst reporters covering the Manson trial back in 1970. Mr. Hatami, of course, was a prominent photographer, taking very early pictures of the Beatles, and would go on to photograph world events such as the Israel-Egypt peace talks of 77 through 78 and the Iranian Revolution in 79. A collection of photos by Hatami covering the Iranian Revolution is owned by the U.S. Library of Congress. At a later occasion, the author had another opportunity to query Mr. Hatami about the above allegations. He was sure he heard about Roman picking up girls on the strip from both Jay Sebring and longtime Polanski friend Simon Hasera, whom Polanski had met while filming Repulsion, and who was in Los Angeles seeking to work in the film business and staying at the Chateau Marmont at the same time as Roman and Sharon. In 1969, Hasera directed a film, Day at the Beach, based on a screenplay by Polanski. Hatami also claimed he was told about it by Sharon, saying, I know this because Sharon told me herself. Now, if you recall, we did a show. Oh, this was a bonus episode. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're on that free feed loser status. I did a bonus show, a TMZ bonus show about the Death of Slim Shady album, Katy Perry's Portals, Marina Abramovich, Matthew Perry, Willy Wonka, and so on. And we talked about the Chateau Marmont, right? And there, let's see. We talked about all the different sort of like seedy affairs that go on there. And I thought there was I'm trying to look through my notes now. I thought there was an actress that died filming A Day at the Beach. Let me see. Hang on, folks. Cue up the music. No, I don't know if that was it. Okay, well, disregard. But anyways, we talked about the Chateau Marmont, which is a place with all kinds of notorious history and activities. Okay, so there's one reference to this supposed sex tape of Sharon Tate and Polanski. Now, what's interesting is that, but a lot of people would say, well, Ed Sanders is a conspiracy theorist. He's crazy, whatever, right? Okay. Let's look to Tom O'Neill's book, Chaos, about the mind control theory of Charles Manson. He's talking about the district attorney, Vincent Bugliosi, who prosecuted the Manson family with his helter-skelter theory. Bugliosi seemed to be in the midst of some kind of internal debate after what felt like a long silence. He told me to turn off my recorder. Quote, this can never be attributed to me, he began. Just say it's from a very reliable source. Quote, end quote. I'll explain later in the book why I'm treating this as an on-the-record response. When he had joined the case, the detectives told Bugliosi they had recovered some videotape in the loft at the house on Cielo Drive. That's where Polanski and Tate lived, and Tate got murdered. According to detectives, the footage clearly filmed by Polanski directed Sharon Tate being forced to have sex with two men. Bugliosi never saw the tape, but he told the detectives, put it back where you found it. Roman has suffered enough. There's nothing to gain. All it's going to do is hurt her memory and hurt him. They're both victims. It was a tawdry aside, I thought, and anyway, Bugliosi had reported most of this episode before. In Helter Skelter, he wrote that the cops had recovered a tape of Roman and Sharon making love, and that it had been discreetly returned to their home. Polanski had found it not long after on the same visit with Julian Wasser and the psychic. He climbed to the ladder to the loft, Bugliosi writes, found the videotape LAPD had returned, and slipped it into his pocket, according to one of the officers who was present. The more I thought about it, the more startled I was that the footage was so sordid. It gave me yet more weight to the live freaky, die freaky motto. And soon after, it occurred to me, if Polanski had coerced Sharon into sleeping with two men and filmed it, wasn't that spousal abuse? Roman's a sicko, Bugliosi had said. He was making her do it. Was it rape? If Bugliosi was telling the truth, and that was a big if, I had soon acknowledged, the tape seemed like something that could have raised Polanski's profile as a suspect, and something, therefore, that the police should have retained as evidence. I hoped that I could verify Bugliosi's story. It was the first piece of new information I had found so far. In my haste to keep reporting, I failed to see that the revelation came with a slip-up on his part, one that would take me more than 6 years to recognize. He couldn't have told the detectives to put the tape back in the loft. As a DA, he wasn't assigned the Tate murder case until November 18, 1969, months after Polanski's August 17th return visit to the house. In the early phases of the case, police need to talk to DAs like Bugliosi to authorize search warrants. If he'd learned about the tape from the detectives back in August, if he'd been the one, as he claimed, who ordered its return to the house, then something in the police investigation had necessitated his involvement much earlier than he'd ever acknowledged. Maybe it was something trifling. Maybe it was something he felt he had to cover up to protect some celebrities' reputations. The point was, we'd never know because it was something he had hidden from his readers. Though I hadn't caught this mistake, there were more variations to come. When I finally found them, it would change the whole tenor of our relationship. If you've never read Chaos, highly recommend it. I want to do a show about it someday. I got to reread it. It's a massive book. There's a ton in there. If you're into the Manson thing, it's a must read, because I've read several Manson books, and it's definitely a key part of the mythology of the Manson story, right? So there's all these allegations about sex tapes being used by celebrities and, you know, law enforcement covering up sometimes to save face and all this stuff, right? Well, one of Diddy's bodyguards, big homie CC, was on the Cam Capone News saying about how he was bodyguarding Bobby Valentino, and he was an R&B singer that was popping. I don't know if he's anymore. I don't do R&B. And Bobby says that P-U-S-S-Y doesn't excite him anymore. And this bodyguard claims he was with trans chicks, and he said that was very common in a lot of these parties. Some pimp had told him that if a man has too much of one thing, he tries other things. And that includes trans chicks, apparently, or going celibate. You know, I don't know if 50 Cent and Lenny Kravitz both claim they're celibate. I guess that's what happens when you hit the limit. I don't know. They ask him about Diddy's camera blackmail op, and he believes it's true. He says it's true because this group of people practice the Church of Somethingtology, if you're picking up what I'm putting down. And that was a thing that they did to get people into compromising positions and hold blackmail footage over their heads and force them to, you know, go along with the program. And he was talking about how, I guess, members of the Somethingtology would wear vials of blood around their neck, which made me think of Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Fox. Remember that? Or Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton. Didn't they do that too? Very interesting. So he also sort of corroborates this idea of believing in sex tape blackmail footage. Then another bodyguard, Gene Deal, says that Diddy had these videos, and it was even worse. It was with politicians from the Daily Mail. I'll read to you. Diddy's former bodyguard revealed the disgraced rap mogul kept tapes of politicians taking part in his infamous freak-off sessions and claimed his arrest is tied to an alleged corruption scandal currently gripping New York City politics. Gene Deal, a former insider who protected Diddy through the 90s, told the Art of Dialogue podcast that the producer's indictment could expose high-profile officials and celebrities in the Big Apple. This is all bigger than Diddy, he said, without naming who the alleged tapes are of. Then later it says, speculation has fallen on the alleged tapes of these sessions. However, prosecutors did not comment on them being filmed. Asked if there are any celebrities on alleged freak-off tapes, Deal responded, Diddy gave celebrity parties, so what do you think? Deal said that while the raids specifically targeted Diddy's properties, the arrests were part of something that is bigger than Diddy. Huh? Listen up. He noted that despite allegations of criminal wrongdoing in lawsuits, including one brought by Diddy's ex-girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, prosecutors in California did not bring charges. Instead, the charges were brought in New York, which Diehl said he believes is linked to a slate of resignations and allegations of corruption among Big Apple officials. He said, people aren't going to tie this together. And then what happens? Eric Adams, the mayor of New York, gets indicted on campaign corruption. What odd timing is that? Another plug for House and Habit, her Substack, she follows political stuff, but then she kind of has these Diddy files. That's the show I did with her. She's following this too, so you can, you know, you can even follow her on the free Substack. She's got lots of great free content, so just saying, check it out. The bodyguard implied that Diddy, and while you're there, subscribe to my Substack. I had a free Substack. I started writing articles, maybe one a month. When I get done with Twin Peaks, I'm gonna maybe bump it up to two a month. We'll see. The bodyguard implied that Diddy himself was victimized early in his career by other powerful music industry figures, and said he blames the ones who trained him and taught him the music business. Puff wasn't born a monster, he was made into a monster. He was made into a monster because of what happened to him, because of the things he had to do. To keep it frank, he was doing to other people what was done to him. That's a learned behavior. And you see that a lot with sex abuse and incest and pedophilia and stuff like that, right? That's generally, it seems like, how that goes. He claimed they was heavy into the drugs. They was heavy into beating women and doing things at that crazy stage. That's going to make him think he can get away with the same things that they was getting away with back then. I'm not going to say allegedly because I saw that for my own self. Diehl said Diddy's dramatic high-profile arrest was karma for a lot of the stuff that he did, including one allegation that he led Biggie Smalls to his death. His karma was bound to catch up with him. Quote, so all the things that are going on right now, the learned behavior that he got from these people who was not living spiritually correct, he went and transferred that and did that to people. Diehl concluded that Diddy's arrest will go down as one of the greatest tragedies in hip-hop, alongside the deaths of Tupac and Biggie Smalls. But listen to what he said there. He implies there's a spiritual angle there, which is another angle that I believe in, right? I do think that it seems like evil behavior. You know, how do you explain it any other way? Drugging and assaulting and raping chicks? Come on, dude. I don't know what it's like to be rich and famous, but I got to think that if you're just doing this purely for sex gratification, that's got to be easy, right? Hell, you could even hire sex workers if that was your thing and you could afford it. So it tells me there's something else going on here. There's some kind of weird power control element. And that just seems straight evil to me. That seems like demonic activity is what I'm saying. Then Suge Knight enters the chat to put a bow on this whole sex tape talk. Oh, man. He corroborates what Gene Diehl says, kind of. From page 6. The former Death Row... Okay, yeah, we already know who Suge Knight is. He says that his artists used to only smoke weed but allegedly got into heavier drugs once they were signed to other record labels. These guys, they introduced cocaine to my artists. He said this to Chris Cuomo on News Nation. So once they got on cocaine, once they got on drugs, once they got on alcohol, then that's when the weird stuff happened. I think that's what took Puffy down that lane. The convicted felon went on to allege that Clive Davis, Russell Simmons, and Andre Harrell used alcohol, drugs to compromise Combs' manhood. Now look, Russell Simmons, I've talked about him, I think on the 3-hour deep dive, he's buddies with Diddy, and he had his own assault allegations. That's why he's over in Indonesia doing yoga full time for the last 5 years, because you don't want to get extradited or something, allegedly. Clive Davis, he's a huge name in the record industry. There's allegations about that. Anyway, so Suge Knight basically corroborates what Gene Diehl says, saying that Diddy got abused and he just learned that behavior and he started abusing other people. Combs was taught that. He got Usher as a kid, alcohol, drugs, sex, Justin Bieber, and see they do these things to take control. You choose to be gay, that's your preference, but they're doing this to people for control. Then it goes on with all the sort of Clive Davis, Russell Simmons, and Harrell have never been charged with allegations. Page Six cannot independently confirm whether these claims are true, yada, yada, yada. And they, of course, all deny it, of course. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. Now, remember, so on that 3-hour deep dive I did, you know, the cup of coffee in the big time, yeah. I got to work on my macho, man. Cup of coffee in the big time, yeah. For the cup of coffee in the big time, you can listen to it. I talked about Candy Michelle Johnson, the lady who wrote about the adrenochrome witch thing, right? And Emily, like I said, on the House and Habit Substack, she dove deeper into Candy and found a 2018 image where she was on Instagram where she was talking about Clive Davis being gay with Diddy. So how did she know? And she also found a bunch of images on Candy Michelle's Instagram that support some of these things. It's pretty crazy. But recall, we talked about Suge Knight not that long ago, warning Diddy about how he knows too many secrets before he got arrested, implying like you might not make it, and maybe that's why Diddy's not eating, because he's afraid of being poisoned. So that is the sex tape thing. It's connected to a lot of darker things. Now let's go around the room with all these celebrities, because I want to sort of, you know, Diddy's got 6 degrees of separation from everybody. Russell Brand is one of these people. I watched this, I talked about this on Tinfoil Hat. Media Matters made this whole video about Russell Brand. Now, I know that Media Matters is a left-wing outfit. I know this is George Soros, right? But I consume liberal and conservative propaganda. I don't believe either one entirely 100%, but there's usually some grains of truth in either one, right? I personally, you know, I did a whole show about Russell Brand. Not a huge fan myself. I think he is an entertainer. I think he likes the attention and the fame and the money and all that, right? I don't blame him. I want those things too. But the Media Matters video goes through his history. When he started out in the 2000s, he was heavy on socialism, egalitarian societies, over abolishing capitalism, real revolutionary liberal kind of dude. A sweetheart to the left, but now he's completely on the other end. Now he's a truther, sweetheart to the right wing, cozying up with Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro and Fox News, he said back in the day Fox News was a terrorist organization, and now he's on Gutfield and all kinds of stuff, right? And they talked about how they went Media Matters. Their theory is that he's doing this for the money and the views, right? Because they looked through all of his history of YouTube videos and nothing was getting the clicks like when he talked about the pandemic and the stabby and all that stuff. And that's why he leaned hard into that around 2020. And since then he's done, you know, he's done pretty much everything you expect from the truther / conservative angle, right? Which, again, some of it's true, right? I talk about it on this show. Great Reset, it's a real thing. The whole pandemic thing is full of suspicious activity. But yeah, he's kind of doing all this. He kind of has a Alex Jones vibe about him now, and he's very much like, oh, Trump is right about everything, and you know, super hardcore supportive of those kind of elements, right? Anyway, where was I going with that? Oh, anyway, so like I'm throwing that on top of the whole, I did a whole show about Russell Brand, about why I don't particularly trust him. And look, I'm not hating. If you want to be an entertainer and you're just like giving the people what they want, which is what I think he's doing, right? And maybe he believes in it. That's fine too. Like, I don't care. You can change your mind. You can believe in it. I no problems with that at all. I'm just saying, if you want me to believe you, that's a different level of scrutiny. And I don't believe him. Now he's like, oh, I'm this reborn Christian. Like, okay. Maybe. I just don't believe it. And I'm allowed to have that belief. Okay? Because I think a lot of these celebrity types like Russell Brand, they view themselves as actors and entertainers. And they're like, I'm just playing a role. People want this role. Obviously, they're clicking, they're listening, they like it. So I will play this role for them. And I will get paid. So I'm not hating on that too much, right? I'm fine with that. I don't necessarily have to trust you now either, right? Anyway, he was in a movie with Jonah Hill and Diddy called Get Him to the Greek, which had a scene about something about Diddy being real shady, right? So sometimes Hollywood shows us these things, this predictive programming in a way, or a bit of the, what do you call it, karmic retribution, like they have to show us what's going on some level. And in 2017 on the Hot Ones show, Russell Brand talked about how much he loved spending summers with Diddy on his private jet and in his house. And there's photos and videos of these two hanging out and all this stuff. So he is under the spotlight right now. Someone who's not necessarily coming up much, of course I will bring it up, is a guy named Ron Burkle. Ron Burgundy. He is one of Diddy's longest business relationships, a billionaire, of course. Back in April 24, New York Post wrote an article about how Diddy was always impressing billionaires, always giving them these great ideas, which sounds a lot like Epstein, by the way. And the article says that he was close with lots of these big billionaire big dogs, like a guy named Mark Benioff, where him and Mark Benioff launched a black business marketplace called Shop Circulate, inspired by Black Wall Street, which, you know, is a real history, right? It's a real history of racism in America, trying to shut down black people finding black markets to support, right? So Diddy and Mark Benioff tried to sort of get something like that going. And it was interesting because I was like, I recognize that name because we talked about Benioff in the Trump Part 4 show with Ryan Routh. Because if you recall, Time Magazine had that image of Trump in the sand trap on 9/11. They released this issue, and the next like day was when we had this assassination attempt. And we talked about how the owner of Time is a company called Salesforce, which is Mark Benioff as CEO, right? And Benioff, he also invested $100 million into Sean John Fashion as well. So, I mean, very close with Diddy. Now, I talked about Burkle in a three-part deep dive on That 70s Show back in 2023, which takes us into Ashton Kutcher, who's also close with Diddy. We talked about how Kutcher, he started a thing called A-Grade Investments, venture capitalist company. They invested in Spotify, Uber, Shazam, SoundCloud, Airbnb. He started this with Ron Burkle. And Ron Burkle was an interesting character because he was hanging out with Bill Clinton and Jeffrey Epstein, even though he said that he thought Jeffrey Epstein was a total creep back a while ago. But he also owned the Ennis House, which is where they filmed Twin Peaks' Invitation to Love. And it was built to emulate a Mayan temple, which is where they used to sacrifice kids back in the day. Did they do it at the Ennis House? I don't know. Is that why he bought it? I don't know. It's just very interesting. And what's also interesting is that Ron Burkle also bought Neverland Ranch because he was close with Michael Jackson. There's, in fact, a photo of Diddy, Michael Jackson, and Ron Burkle hanging out in the same room. Now, something else curious is he was buddies with Epstein, right? But he's like, oh, he's a creep. Yet Ron Burkle calls his private jet the Air Fuck-1 as a play on Air Force One, which sounds a lot like the Lolita Express kind of vibe, right? And you always see Diddy with his private jet. What are these guys doing? So anyway, Burkle and Kutcher starts this A-Grade Investments, which turns into Sound Ventures. And one of these companies that they fund is called Thorn. It used to be called the DNA Foundation. And Kutcher started this company with Demi Moore to address the sexual exploitation of children, trafficking, videos, images, all that stuff. And they claimed they were doing this by collaborating with Facebook, Microsoft, Google to get a database of child images. Now, we talked about this on Tinfoil Hat, and Sam had the very astute observation and said, what if they're collecting this imagery so that they could, I don't know, sell it or use it for their own nefarious purposes? Well, that's a good point. But the claim was they were trying to shut down these kinds of things, which sounds great, right? And he got in a little bit of trouble because, just like Tim Ballard in Operation Underground Railroad, he cited a study that claimed that 100,000 to 300,000 kids are trafficked every year in America, which is an obscenely high number, right? It's upsetting. However, when you dig into it, the people who actually do try to save the kids, they tell you, like, look, that study, that statistic needs to stop being used. It's not real. Primarily because the authors of the study disavowed it and said, yeah, we just made that up. We were guessing. Because no one really knows the answer is the truth. But Tim Ballard and Kutcher, they do fundraising using these statistics because it sounds terrible, right? Which, look, it's still terrible, even if it's a much smaller number. But, like, let's be honest about it, right? And the allegations are that Thorne is connected through to the CIA via, you know, Whitney Webb published an article in September 2020 talking about how Kutcher, who's buddies with Jeff Bezos, was trying to get Amazon's facial recognition software in the hands of police forces, and they did. They got in trouble because during the Black Lives Matter protests, this facial recognition software is being used, and it improperly found a bunch of criminals, and so on. All right, so there's all these connections, and we go deep into it in that 70s show, part three, I believe. But Kutcher got his start as a model for Abercrombie and Fitch, which was a brand started by Les Wexner. And who was Les Wexner? He was BFFs with Epstein and Charles Bronfman. That's right, Bronfman from the NXIVM thing. Bronfman, the family that started Seagram's, which bought Universal Music Group back in the day, right? And Lucian Grange is the current CEO. He is of Universal, and he is named in the lawsuits by Little Rod as being alleged part of the RICO conspiracy stuff. That's why I said this has the potential to just be this insanely large case unless they find a way to get Diddy to stop talking. Again, probably why he's not eating food. You know what I mean? Now, Ashton Kutcher, to wrap it up with him, there's rumors that him and Mila Kunis are separated or even getting divorced because of Ashton Kutcher's closeness with Diddy. She don't like that. She was okay with him defending rapist, convicted rapist Danny Masterson, but Diddy's a step too far. That shows you how bad of things are going. And there was a 2019 Hot Ones interview where that went viral with Ashton Kutcher talking about how he goes to Diddy's parties, but he can't talk about what he sees there. Just says they were weird. Okay. Then we get into 23andMe. I follow this guy at Chaotic369 on TikTok. He does some pretty good videos, so shout out to him. He posted a video about Sergey Brin, the founder of Google, and Ann Wojcicki, his wife. And apparently they were buds with Epstein. I didn't know this. Sergey Brin... Remember, and I did two episodes on the Google conspiracy back in like 2018. Again, you can check out the index of all my episodes that I've ever done at IlluminatiWatcher.com. You'll see a link in the show notes as well. And you can kind of do a control F search and look for these things on your own if you want. I did two episodes on why Google is the Illuminati. But Sergey Brin was buddies with Epstein, apparently. Epstein got Sergey Brin to put his money into J.P. Morgan, into their banks. And Sergey Brin's wife, Anne, her sister was Susan. And she was the CEO of YouTube for like a decade. And she was worth $765 million. And she helped create Google in 98 because she had rented out her garage and became their first marketing manager. She had, and so on. Now, she died a month ago, August 4th, 2024, at age 56 from lung cancer. Her son Marco died at age 19, February 13th, 2024. Seems odd. It happens. Seems odd, is all I'm saying. Now, Sergey Brin's wife, Anne, she's still alive. She's the CEO and co-founder of 23andMe, the company that tests DNA. Recall that Epstein had this weird, bizarre fascination with collecting DNA, right? Remember, he had the Zorro Ranch where he was talking about transhumanism and all kinds of crazy stuff. So I think, and remember, Ashton Kutcher's company, Thorne, was originally called the DNA Foundation. I think they're collecting data, is what I'm saying. Biodata. Well, what's interesting is that 23andMe is in the news because apparently everybody, their whole, all their directors have stepped down because apparently the Anne wants to take the company private. And there's all kinds of talk about different CEOs quitting after the Diddy scandal because apparently they want to fade to black. Kevin Lyles is one. He's resigned from the Warner Music Group as the executive VP. What else is there? Yeah, even TMZ talked about this. They talked about how he's been vocally defending the mounds of allegations against Puff. Of course, the biggest music industry news of the day is the Diddy indictment. Yada, yada, yada. Then, you know, and there's a bunch of celebrities that are kind of rehashing in the news cycle, like Aubrey O'Day from Danity Kane. She was saying how Diddy groomed her. Aaliyah, I saw a video where they're saying now that a witness saw Aaliyah being drugged at the airport before she died. Voluntarily, she asked for a pill of some kind, she takes it, and then she passes out. And they carry her unconscious body into the plane, which was flown by a pilot who had worked for that company for 3 days. And that pilot allegedly said, "I'm not flying this plane because it's 700 pounds overweight, supposedly." And then it crashes and she dies. Now, Aaliyah's got... She was dating Damon Dash, very close with Jay-Z and R. Kelly. I mean, this, again, massive can of worms. Let's talk about Nicki Minaj real quick. She has been tweeting. We're almost done, folks. She has been tweeting on September 21st. She basically talks about how she got screwed out of some deal with Tidal. Tidal was the music company set up by Jay-Z and a bunch of other rappers, and he sold it. And she's kind of saying she got screwed, right? And got scammed. And let's see. And she's just kind of complaining about it, but then it starts taking a turn. She says, "Every day a new man pushing 60 years of age gets fingered in the bussy." That's a beehole. "Then made to come on the internet and lie on me." Then someone posts a video about Cameron talking to Mace about how Cam and Mace didn't sign a contract and now they're banned from Fanatics. I think he's referring to the company Fanatics, which Jay-Z is a co-owner of. And some person said, let's see. Oh, well, that gets kind of confusing. Okay, here's the part I wanted to talk to you about. She writes, "They got to keep the conversation on me so that no one asks about these charges against their BFF." That's Diddy. "I mean, it seems the 30-year-old T here is far from stale. Patterns, Yet, SAS, Ugly Alien, Stout, Dick Breath, etc. All talking about Onika? Why are they talking about Oniqua?" She's talking about herself. That's her real name, I think, Onika. And she's talking about Jay-Z and Steve Stout and Diddy. She says, "Worried about the tea of a 15-year-old child who was railroaded, but no comments on the tea and baby oil that's been going on for decades. If 15-year-olds need to be held accountable and told they can't ever move past their past, then what about the 30-year-old who groomed and groomed, sat by and was silent? Oh, right, let's keep the blogs focused on Oniqua." Yada, yada, yada. "Undercover men are always aggravated with women because they have decided that they can't live in their truth." Talking about gay men. "Therefore, women who have done nothing wrong to them are made to pay for simply existing." Then she says, "Dear Short and Stout Dick, Laffy Taffy Alien." She's talking about Diddy and Steve Stout and Jay-Z, I think. We want to know if you were present during abuse of teenagers and children. That's what we want to know. You can't taste my pee. Aaliyah, Foxy, etc. during R. Kelly videos, shoots, and stuff. Did you know about the abuse to Kim Porter and Cassie? Y'all seem to always run in a sort of rat pack. So that's what we the people want you and your peeps to speak on. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, and that should be about it, I think. Okay. And then she posted about how she surpassed Jay-Z to become the sixth longest charting rapper of all time on Billboard. All right, next. Usher. Went the other way. He deleted all of his tweets. And supposedly he says he got hacked. And the hackers, they break into his account and they delete all his tweets. Come on. Come on, really? So did Megan Fox. Right? Remember the Church of Somethingtology with the blood vial thing we talked? I don't know. That's just unfloating a crazy, unfounded conspiracy there. Pink as well. Deleted all. Pink? What's she involved with? But recall, Usher is connected to all these things, right? Remember, he allegedly got herpes from Diddy when he was a boy. That's what the theory, the gossip theories online claim. When he was 15, he told Howard Stern how he attended these Diddy flavor camp parties as a child and said he would never take his kids to these flavor camp parties. And then Lil Rod even mentions Usher in a covert way. But allegedly, Usher was used by Diddy and L.A. Reid and Russell Simmons. Allegedly. Gossip. And now all of his tweets are deleted. Very strange. Jay-Z. He is Diddy's best friend. And he's been notoriously silent about this whole thing. People are bringing up his name with Aaliyah and Rihanna. I've seen a video saying that he apparently signed her on contract when she was 15 down in the Barbados. And I did it at 3 in the morning and threatened to toss her off a balcony, allegedly. I mean, this is all, I don't know how people find this out, but that's what they claim. Supposedly, he blackballed Maya. Remember Maya? Apparently, he blackballed her because she wouldn't do things. And allegedly, and this gets dark, Kathy White, his baby mama, she died real young. And people are comparing that to Kim Porter, who died real young. I'll let you kind of dig into that. And then final story, Kendrick Lamar gets the Super Bowl, right? Because you know Jay-Z and Roc Nation, they decide who does the Super Bowl halftime shows. One of the largest events of the year, probably the largest event of the year. And people are saying, dude, the Super Bowl's in New Orleans, and that's where Lil Wayne is from. Why can't Wayne do the Super Bowl halftime show? In fact, Wayne had a video, and he was crying about it. He's like, bro, that hurt, man. What the hell? And I know that I used to be a big fan of the Hot Boys. All them dudes are out of prison. We can't have a Hot Boys reunion. Wouldn't that be sick? But, you know, Jay-Z is he's a big mover and shaker. He's very political. That's why J-Lo got the Super Bowl before Wayne. Okay. She's bestie with Jay-Z and Beyonce. She performed with Shakira. Shakira also used to be under Roc Nation. It's also why Usher performed. He's with Roc Nation and Rihanna and Alicia Keys. Like, these people are all plugged into Jay-Z's network. And I think, I mean, it's more than a thing. There's a lot of online Reddit stuff. Jay-Z's got beef with Drake and thus has beef with Wayne because Wayne founded Drake and Nicki Minaj. Obviously, Nicki Minaj has beef with Jay-Z too. So I think this extends to Wayne. And Drake dissed Megan Thee Stallion, who's on Roc Nation, one of their biggest artists right now. And so on, right? Drake said that she lied about getting shot in the foot and that her music isn't good. And I disagree with that. I love her music. And she probably did get shot in the foot. And this apparently goes, I try to find the root of this. Back in 2014, Drake told Rolling Stone that Jay-Z's art choices are corny from his Magna Carta album. He says, it's like Hov can't drop bars these days without at least 4 art references. I would love to collect art at some point, but I think the whole rap art world thing is getting kind of corny. I agree. Like, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't care about art. Not that there's a problem with art. I just, you know, that's not for average people. Then Jay-Z and Jay Electronica. Jay Electronica, of course, he was married to one of the Rothschilds, did a freestyle track, and Jay-Z said, "Sorry, Mrs. Drizzy, for so much art talk. Silly me rapping about stuff that I really bought. While these rappers rap about guns they ain't shot and a bunch of other silly stuff that they ain't got." So I'm here thinking, like, man, that sucks. How's Wayne not on the halftime show? And people say, well, Wayne hasn't been popping for a few years. What about Suicide Boys? They're from New Orleans, and they're huge. They're huge, and they're also from New Orleans, right? And all this happens, and right before I'm about to record this show, Drake posts an image on his socials of him hanging out with the Suicide Boys. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe. Maybe there'll be a surprise turnaround, but I don't think so. I think Jay-Z's got beef with these people, and he doesn't really care about giving the people what they want. He wants to give the people what benefits him, which I think is telling of his character. Now, that's all I got for today, but stay subscribed to the podcast. In fact, while I'm talking, if you're not subscribed, hit the subscribe button, because I don't know if it's the next episode. In the future here soon, I'm going to do a full episode about this book, Kim Porter's Alleged Lost Words. Allegedly her memoir. I actually don't believe it is, but just for fun, because conspiracies are fun. I'm going to go through the book and tell you all the juicy bits. I tell you, I'm like 7 pages in, and I'm already like, this is crazy. How can anyone believe this is really her talking? But whatever, let's do it, right? I'm going to sit and don't buy it. I'll tell you what's in it, right? I mean, if you want to help this fraud out, I don't believe this person who wrote it really, I don't think it's really her lost words, but maybe. I think it's just some person cashing in on this tragedy, which is sick. But, you know, I got the book, so I'm going to go through it. I'm going to do it one of these weeks here. I'm going to do a show about it, so stay subscribed to the podcast. And while you got your little phone out, I want you to leave a 5-star review, because guess what? I get 1-star haters on this show. Can you believe it? All this hard work I do, and people have the cojones to drop a 1-star. The 1-star haters, they got to be overcome with a 5-star. So if you like the show, if you want to support the show, hit that 5-star button right now on whichever app you use. And I will put links in the show notes. Again, you can check out more on Diddy. I've got a few options. It depends on how you like your content, right? If you like the way I do it on this show, where I kind of give you all the info with the sources and tell you exactly what the things say, I got the 3-hour deep dive, cheaper than a cup of coffee in the big time. Yeah. You can do that on the Patreon, or I've got a conversational informal show I do with my wife called Breaking Social Norms. And I made some appearances, Tinfoil Hat and House and Habit. Anyways, links are in the show notes. Check those out for more. Stay subscribed to the podcast. Drop me a 5-star. Till next time, stay positive.